I'm sorry, I shouldn't be laughing at that one. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Rudolf Hucker. Yes, Hutton is still a little out of position, but more on that later on. We've got the emergency seating out of storage, and so seated around our one working microphone in a circle so that we can pass the talking stick is the rest of the crew. The inimitable Harry Balzac.
Good evening.
The inhibition-free Wilma Fingerdoo.
Good evening, everyone.
The indescribable Mia Harkness.
Hello.
The insensible Juan Kerr.
What?
Yeah, that's me.
And the indomitable and indefatigable, you got me, Norma Snockers.
Hello, everyone.
Well, the tech monkey looks fretty. I'm certainly not. Let's get on with the headlines. It's Hanky Poos. Yup, Hanky Poos himself.
Has enchantment gone too far?
Shock or amazement? Alex Zuno's been mugged.
A report from Clusterfuck. Oh, I'm sorry. Chucklefuck.
News of the Eggy Poos smells of both.
It's just a jump to the left.
Crisis? What crisis? No sense in wasting it.
It's in the black, white and red all over. Community events.
There was panic over in Hot Coal Space. That's the little bit over in Colonia, for those of you that are geographically challenged, just near Fort Mug. Earlier this week, after reports that Dorisso had seen unwanted visitors of the Four Spaceships of the Apocalypse kind. Dorisso, the current pied-à-terre of Commanders King, High Generalissimo, Admiral Hanky, a number of his clones, Flossie and Rampage, was quietly minding its own business and engaging in the usual day-to-day activities common there, including grilling some flavoured nachos with cheese and sluicing out the agridome after that particular accident, when there was a sudden, extremely loud bass note over the station speakers and the ominous, "Warning! Capital class signature detected!" Then not one, but three fleet carriers hove into view, complete with the kinds of noise that a THX advert would be proud of. The station boards lit up with the names of the carriers. War, Famine, Death and Scrofula. King Hanky went more than a little pale. Flossie unwrapped Special Pan number 5, and Rampage started putting on enough body armour to reduce his walking speed to that of an ageing turtle. Emergency signals were sent to Hutton HQ in the bubble asking for urgent IFF details on the incoming ships. They were identified as being owned by one Commander Ratcatcher. And whilst listed as neutral fleet carriers, everyone, including the Hanky, was quite rightly worried that bad things were about to happen. Hutton HQ sent an urgent message via the Galactic Forums to Commander Ratcatcher, who, like Hanky, maintains a fleet of near-identical clones, asking whether there was about to be a bout of fisticuffs, and whether Hanky's panic was justified. The reply? Whoops. And, yeah, I can see how that might have appeared. It turns out that Dorisso is the nominated holiday home of Commander Ratcatcher, a longtime friend to Hutton and Hot Coal, and the Commander just hadn't realised the consequences of naming fleet carriers after the harbingers of the Apocalypse on unsuspecting Hanky clones and the general population. Two of Hanky's pet snakes had gone stiff with shock. One of Flossie's hamsters needed the administration of the tiny defibrillator that she carries at all times. And the laundry bill for soiled underwear is said to be one of the largest that Dorisso has seen in a long time. Commander Ratcatcher has opened communications via the Colonia Citizens Network to reassure everyone that they were just on a bit of a jolly. And they are, of course, firm friends with Hot Coal. Oh, and that a shipment of Valium, green tea and a disc of soothing music has been dispatched by waiting Apex Taxi to Hutton's Hot Coal HQ to ensure that everyone remains calm.
You'll remember Commander Enchantman. She's been keeping us up to date with her journey far, far out into the black with her spiking companion. Well, she did it. And here's her final report. Day 196.
Well then, somehow, despite my best attempts at sabotaging myself, I managed to make it to the end without dying. I'm 279 light years from the nearest star, which comes out to 65,926 light years from Sol. I had trouble sleeping last night since Phil kept waking me up to check on the fuel level, even though I set 2 alarms. In the end, I decided to just go on ice and finish today. To reduce fuel usage, I engineered the FSD to have just barely enough max jump range to make it back with the FSD injection. This means it only has a window of about 10 hours to make the jump. Any sooner and it's too heavy. Any later and it doesn't have enough fuel. I could jump at the end of the window, which could push me an extra light year or so. However, there'd also be a real risk of running too low and getting stuck. As funny as it would be to call for the fuel rats over 200 light years from the nearest star, I'm sure they've had more than enough of crazy idiots flying out into the intergalactic space after the debacles with Persera and Diluvian. Before jumping back, I decided to spend a moment to reveal a conspiracy. According to the Discovery Scanner specs, it only works while inside a star system. It will refuse to even attempt to scan other stars, let alone planets and signals in those systems. I am 279 light years outside the Oivassi SGYD0, and I intentionally didn't perform a system scan before departing. Despite objectively being outside this star system, I was able to perform a system scan. How strange.
Day 196, part 2.
I successfully jumped to Oivassi RGYD0, which was 290 light years away. This ship normally has a jump range of just over 25 light years. I don't know if this voids the warranty, but some engineer at Lakon is probably watching me do this and crying. One of my clones met me in the Exploder. Don't ask about the name. To refuel me so I could jump back to Oivassi SGYD0. This was necessary because I didn't put a fuel scoop on this ship so I could carry more fuel. In hindsight, this was totally unnecessary since I jumped with 5 extra tons of fuel in reserve anyway. Ah well. I wanted to be extra careful, so I transferred over more than enough fuel to make it. This ended up biting me in the behind, because now the ship is too heavy to jump back. I'm going to turn on all the modules and crank up the AC to burn some of it off. While I'm waiting, I think I'll land on one of these planets. I haven't felt gravity in months. It's only 0.1G, but it's better than nothing.
Day 197.
Made it back to the system I started in. Small issue. The carrier I last fueled at doesn't have a shipyard, and this ship can't jump far enough to return to Beagle Point, which means I'm stranded. I opened up Galnet to see if I could bribe a fleet carrier owner to make a stop and pick me up. But luckily I found that there was a new carrier in the system that does have a shipyard. That means I can transfer my Anaconda Hover over and head home. Whoever owns the Kobayashi Maru, thank you.
Day 197, part 2.
Okay, never mind. Transferring over the Anaconda will cost half a billion credits. Looks like I'm taking a Diamondback Explorer instead. Still, really looking forward to not being stranded. I'm also looking forward to talking to someone who isn't a mindless clone or a cactus. I'm still not entirely sure what possessed me to spend months of time and millions of credits to explore a literal empty void. But here I am.
Earlier this week, a terrible injustice was rectified. We realised that Alex Zuno, known by pirates everywhere as She Who Must Be Feared, Oh My God, Is That Her, Eject, 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 had a ship capable of shredding ships into space confetti, the skills to make it happen, and the willingness to share how it's done, and much more besides. But what didn't she have? A Hutton mug. Her partner in crime and punishment, Vulcarius, had managed to grab a mug a few weeks ago after telling everyone in the green room how they achieved their eye-catching bounty totals, but no such reward had found its way to Alex. The Mug Ownership Injustice-Solving Trustees, MOIST for short, were unanimous in deciding that Alex Zuno had earned herself a mug several times over, and it was high time that something was done about it. Packaging was sourced, an appropriate message was penned, safe, reliable transport was organised, and last weekend the handover was complete. Alex had her mug, and Alex, always voluble but never loquacious, don't worry, I can wait when you look that up, wanted to send a response. So here it is, verbatim.
On the topic of your gift to me, I want to discuss the matter of my thanking you. I want to thank you eventually, but not as an isolated response to receiving one of your space mugs. I want to have the right context and perspective when I say it. To that end, I want to tell you a story. I have always enjoyed reading the words and understanding the thoughts of other commanders. I enjoy meeting, observing, listening to, and speaking with them, particularly when I can learn something or teach something. Through research, experimentation, and conversation, I find it pleasing to amass and share as much knowledge as I can. As I did this, I omitted to notice that a problem was forming. Such was becoming gradually more difficult, where ever finer details would blur the line between simplification and oversimplification. This remained relatively manageable until I learned one specific minutia. Landing gear prevents accidental boosting. This had no direct impact upon me, for boosting accidentally and being unable to boost while landing were not problems I had encountered, much to the relief of the Imperial Flight Operations Bureau. Indirectly, it transformed my flight style completely after I tested and explored how it modifies a boost already in effect, which I consider now to be the most powerful flight method a pilot can implement. I wanted to try it using the fastest starship, which can mount the heaviest weapons. I constructed the Hailstrom, my beloved Mamba, the potency of which continues to amaze me.
Unfortunately, it also made browsing conversations on Galnet instantly more frustrating. It frustrated me to see accusations of various starships being unable to stop or turn effectively. Statements which I knew to be false, but had no convincing or sufficiently polite means to challenge. Any attempt at mere verbal description was met with bafflement and was largely disregarded. I felt like Cassandra of Troy from the ancient Greek legends of Earth, blessed with prophecy but cursed with disbelief. Reading about Cassandra again left me stunned, and when I discovered that the Messenians and some followers of Dionysus used instead the name Alexandra. My name. Upon reflection, I think that said legend was cautionary, where prophecy and disbelief represent knowledge and its resistance to imposition. It was a warning that a seeker of knowledge will be all but alone in enjoying it, like a dark pact which denies the basic human desire to share. Cassandra tried to change her fate, despite knowing that what would befall Troy, and that foretelling would be to be no avail, but failed to realise that the curse only precluded speaking the truth directly. I think that the best knowledge cannot just be told, but must be shown explicitly, demonstrated with irrefutable evidence, or imparted by helping others carefully to discover it for themselves. This formed my motivation to display my hunting style. I needed to forge a visual, informative and polite way to show veteran commanders that there remains a small but critical gap in their flight ability. I knew the completion of such would involve considerable effort, though I did not expect that a passing comment disclosing the idea to you would translate to all but a full Galnet announcement from Alpha Centauri. This alarmed me a bit, not yet having written a single word towards anything of the sort, but this matter was negligible compared to the importance of how you referred to it. Do you remember? You told your audience that they may receive a masterclass.
Even if this was exaggerated a little, it was inspiring nonetheless. It helped me to think beyond any concerns I had about my place to instruct others. My daily walk started to serve as a valuable design time, soon yielding a 3.5 chapter plan and a drive to try producing the first 1.5. I was prepared either to continue its direction if it showed promise or to cancel it if not. In a sense, I should have known better than to send you a draft version, in that I was not prepared for it to be given a grand presentation straight away. Conversely, your doing so also represented an overwhelming amount of belief in my ability and trust in my delivery. Without any foreknowledge of my plan for the remaining chapters or any assurance of their completion, you trusted me with your entire audience, each of whom welcomes your show as a guest into one's home. You called the second chapter uplifting, which captured perfectly my intention to empower rather than to belittle, and you promoted the full article heavily upon release of the third chapter. Sharing it has become quite a pleasure ever since, especially if I open with some curse-breaking videos, and I will always treasure the range of awed, interested, and exclamatory responses. So, thank you, the Hutton Orbital Truckers Cooperative, for all the inspiration, promotion, belief, encouragement, and trust you have given me. Thank you for your weekly broadcast, for reporting the ventures of commanders around the galaxy, and for including my occasional contributions. You have helped me establish several permanent additions to the set of things that I enjoy, and your support throughout was a blessing I will never forget. Now that you understand my position and how to translate what I say into what I feel, I can close with thanking you for sending me a space mug. Commander Alex Zuno, Imperial Navy Intervention and Rescue.
Incoming transmission from Commander Chucklefuck.
Date 19th February. Time, late.
Pilot's log. I'm so hungry. I've done what feels like 500 delivery missions and I've not eaten for days. No time for a break because all of the missions were behind schedule. The first moron thought it was funny to send me in a collection mission, then hide inside the security building when I get back. What an arsehole. Anyway, that put me behind for 2 days, and we all know that being late means losing pay. Some of those bastards got me packages, got their packages with minutes to spare, and none of them offered me so much as a crunchy Soylent Green and Pineapple Energy Bar. I've seen a great recipe for a radiated Karsuki Locust. I've got some in cryo, but I need a power regulator to zap them with. When I've done these last few collections, I'm taking a shutdown mission, and then I'll bloody well treat myself.
Date, 20th of February. Time, very late.
Pilot's log. Well, that's the collections finished. Guy at the outpost of the shutdown mission, which he says is legit. The site's virtually abandoned already. There should only be a couple of security guards there to chase off the scavs. So it's in, shut down, out, collect payment, feast. Then I am putting my feet up for a couple of days.
Date, 20th of February. Time, very, very late.
Pilot's log. Shit! Shit, 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 shit. That lying bastard. This place is fucking hoaching with security. I breached the console, started the shutdown, and then all hell broke loose. Not only that, it's a bloody despair house settlement. That twunt said it was for them, not against them. Oh, where did he get a rocket launcher?
Recording ends.
Commander Chucklefuck is currently residing in the Hutton Infirmary. pending Nurse Wyeth's tender ministrations. In lieu of flowers or fruit, please make a donation to the Legless Pilots Foundation. That's for pilots who've lost their legs, not the one for alcoholics. Bottles of Lucozade with that crinkly orange cellophane wrapping are welcome. Right, so, apologies to the Despair Owls for raiding their base by accident. Apology to the people of Karsuki, your locust should never be zapped, only shallow fried with ginger and a curry leaf. I'm not apologising to the Soylent Corporation. What possessed you to put pineapple in a Soylent energy bar, you doughbenders? People of Hutton, you see enough incompetence in the course of a day without some muppet phoning it in to be read out in the radio. We are very, very sorry.
Incoming encrypted transmission. Decrypting. Decryption complete.
Stand by for a message from Haxcom Actual.
Okay, Haxwing. In spite of Tharg's tenacity, we're entering the mop-up stage in our defense against his latest campaigns. We have completely cleared incursions in the Bubble and Pleiades. The Coalsack Nebula is down to 3 marginal systems, and the Witchhead Nebula has 1 marginal, 2 moderate, and 1 significant presence. Our top defense priorities in the Coalsack are mopping up in HIP 62154 and Coalsack Sector VU-O B6-6. In the Witchhead, current focus is the defense of Lembas. Check Tharloid.watch for status and priority updates. We have no currently burning stations, so no evacuation operations are needed. There are 8 stations still under repair from earlier attacks. Operation Ida is currently hauling repair supplies to Gunport in Dan. You can learn more about them at OperationIda.com. Our efforts are bearing fruit, truckers. Barring any new attacks, we're about ready for the final push to clear all current incursions. Let's finish strong. Watch out for your wing. Keep your eyes on those signal sources, and be ever ready to defend the mug.
Hexcom message complete. Defend the mug.
Encrypted transmission complete.
The conflict in Paladin space rumbles on, though the Eggypoos, that's longhand for EGPU, are claiming a mighty victory over in Obatrima over the last few days. First, a quick recap on why this system is important. The Paladin Consortium, or PALCON in BGS lingo, accidentally expanded there, then attempted to do the honourable thing and leave the system by fighting against themselves. Despite this, they won. Then they won the system. Intelligence sources have stated that the EGU actively engineered this false flag situation as a pretext for conflict, mainly as they were bored and wanted a reason to manufacture something to do. For the last 3 months, the Paladin Consortium have been actively trying to leave the system and hand back ownership, which this week they've achieved. EGU propaganda has been released that the Eggypoos have secured a huge victory and taken the system back, and that PALCON plus allies are now on the run, which, if meaning loading up the moving trucks with the stuff that was already packed as they've always intended to move out is one, pretty rank flavour of the truth. PALCON and Hutton, plus other allies, including the Fatherhood, have reiterated that they're relieved to be out of it as it smells rather of weak old borscht and grandma's hairnets. However, hopes that this means the rest of the ongoing conflicts will be resolved soon are a little dim. And like those selfsame hopes, the EGU seem to rather enjoy being vigorously and repeatedly kicked in the frameshift drive by heavy-booted truckers and want another crack at losing. Ongoing conflicts in Nabateen, Sugririk, LFT-37 and others persist, so if anyone feels like gaining a few more combat ranks and some scuffs on their toe caps, there are CZs aplenty to be had.
For those of you who helped shove the station out of the way last week, our thanks here from the radio team. Just enough pushing and shoving was done to move the station little over a kilometre to one side as the ball of space junk approached at speed, and the light show as the station remote turrets, based on those little platforms floating around Hutton, was spectacular as a number of stray patches of scrap were turned into smaller scrap before they incurred any damage on the station. A small number of microparticles of scrap did make it to the orbital and have left a number of incy-wincy little holes in things, but welding teams have been hard at work sticking stuff over the holes before too much of the air escapes. The Hutton Library appears to have taken the brunt of the damage, with famous works including copies of Pie and Prejudice, Lord of the Rings, and A Midsummer Night's Dram taking extensive damage to their covers, obliterating important letters. Now that the imminent danger has passed, there is a debate as to whether the station should be left where it is or pushed back neatly into the previous orbit in the hopes that there won't be any more failed Hutton runs presenting clear and present danger to the orbital. Notes as to the final resting place of the giant swathe of space scrap are unconfirmed after station astronomers admitted that they watched it until it passed in front of Proxima, at which point they realised they were staring directly into the sun and now have funky blue dots in their vision and can't see straight. They have applied for cybernetic implants with built-in Rayburn light-sensitive filters fitted directly to the retinas to prevent this from ever happening again.
Well, it's been an interesting and exciting week here in Hutton Space. We have two ongoing challenges for control of long-standing Hutton systems, one a war and one an election, and a close encounter with a challenger in a third system. More on those stories later. Last week's infrastructure failures in Barnard Star, PSPF-LF2 and Y0855. -0714 were relieved in the week, so well done to truckers who assisted in relieving those. However, Barnard Star has been compromised to the point where tent fleets are now within only 5 points of Hutton, as we languish on only 24%. Unusually, there are no other conflicts in the system, so there's never been a better time to go in there, boost Hutton interest, and raise us into the dizzying heights of system influence that are the low 30s. Trepin has become a certifiable basket case of unrest, with 6 of the 7 factions in some form of conflict, now including Hutton. The 7th faction would probably be at it too if they could find someone to fight, or have an election against. Oh, and if they weren't bankrupt on 1 cent and can neither afford ammunition, manifesto leaflets or party election rosettes. We have inadvertently stumbled into an election for control of Trepin against the CIA, the collective of independent agents, in which we are currently leading 1-0. So you know the drill, mander those jerrys, stuff some ballots and run election missions for Hutton. Last week's story, warning of Sirius Corporation's ambitions in AVIC, have come to fruition. Despite going behind in the first days, Hutton quickly won 2 days in a row, and it currently stands at 3-2, with only one more day of victory being required from either of the remaining two. Epsilon Eridani continues to slowly climb away from the mad monks who have caught themselves a dose of mods. Skirting the 40% zone are Kukari, where a pirate itch needs to be scratched, and Wise 0855-0714, which is slowly on the up after its problems with dodgy environmental filters last week. All these distractions have meant that our push for control of Wolf 562 has lost some ground temporarily, and the gap to the leading faction, Wolf 562 Major Inc., has widened to 17%. At the overachieving end of the Hutton Systems table, we have 4 systems above 60%, including the normally dull backwater of Haghole. So whoever has been doing whatever it is they shouldn't be doing in Haghole, stop it at once. And finally, we are still waiting to see which dump we expanded into from last week. Meanwhile, in Clonia, Grand High Admiral Chief Air Marshal Generalissimo Hanky, Grand Kazi of all the Colonia clones, asked that truckers finish off the final day of the election against Colonia Council in Tyr and boost Hotcol in two other colonic systems, Pythias and Deriso. Priorities this week are, if you want to truck something, win the election in Trepin and boost Hutton influence in Barnard Star. If you want to shoot something, Avik still needs saving from Sirius Corporation, and those pesky pirates need ventilating in Kakari. Keep an eye on Barnard Star in case that turns into a shooting war.
The Elite Dangerous community has always been both ambitious and inclusive, and this week's crop of community-led events is no exception. We've got news about All the Clouds in the Sky, the Magellan Experience, the Nexus Exploration, New Year New Discoveries 3308, Celebration of Early Astronomy 4, yet another Bandit Racing League event, a report of the Buckyball races going back to Bariso, something called Small Ship Smackdown, and early news of a new 5 Euro Tours expedition. Links will of course be posted in Twitch chat and also in the description of the YouTube upload. Commander Diluvian's expedition All the Clouds in the Sky has been making good headway, but he might have been a little distracted at some point, as he explains.
Expedition Day 163. We left the Pleiades on the 20th of February and did a small detour before our next main location. I think I mentioned before that there are cloud-like objects on the galaxy map that are not necessarily well documented, or rather, not documented at all. I do not think that dark regions, especially the small ones, are mentioned anywhere in the archives that I could find. Long story short, I decided to try and get as close as possible to another interesting anomaly of this kind, Ares' dark region. Unfortunately, the purplish colour of it and the fact that there isn't a good system nearby that would allow us to watch it with the Milky Way as a background meant that it was, a bit of a disappointment, but nothing unexpected. After all, when you look at the map, there's not much to see there either. Our next waypoint, on the very same day, we arrived at the Eskimo Nebula. Very pretty, but no landable bodies in the system. In fact, nothing but the main O star and a black hole not too far away. That was a night of travel, as I couldn't sleep. I pushed the Zodiac further, and at 3 a.m. on the 21st of Feb, we arrived at HIP 23759, officially recognised as a marker for the Witch Head Nebula. There's a lot of activity in the area, especially alien, and definitely a few places to visit, so we're going to stick around for a while. Last night we had some good fun in the system, but there's more that I want to see, and definitely find a couple of good places outside the nebula with a great angle for eye candy shots. I'm not going to hide that the participating in a very special event on the 20th boosted the morale of the crew. It was a privilege to hold a special stellar transmission of the event from the other corner of the galaxy. My last record of distance from Sol got just blown out of the water. And together we celebrated the accomplishment of our friend Enchantman, but that's a separate story.
Members of the expedition, the Magellan Experience, refuse to feel lonely, even when they're equidistant from the edges of nowhere. Commander Richard Fluminez M has an update on their progress.
The Magellan Experience is officially at Hawking's Gap. Currently, carriers are being directed towards the focal point, which is the siren at the centre of the region. The reason for this is that we are surveying the unexplored parts of the region that, surprisingly, have many points of interest. The expedition will focus our effort in adding more dots to the map and hopefully motivate people to visit the region besides the Guardian Ruins or a couple of archive points of interest.
Commander Richard Fluminez M would also like to give some publicity to a video that's been made by Commander Enigmatic about the expedition. This is part one of, he reckons, 15 parts. So you binge watchers, decide now if you're going to wait, but I suggest that you go and watch right now. Now you know I meant that metaphorically. Go and watch after the show. Commander Caboose has another short update from Nexus.
freight carrier, the Legacy of Dawn, remains in deep space for the time being as the Gary Hogan has encountered delays. The Gary Hogan will depart colonized space by the end of this month to relieve the Legacy of her outpost.
Commanders taking part in New Year New Discoveries 3308, a fleet carrier equipped trip to the core and back, are still tearing across the galaxy, and Commander Arbridge has sent us some figures and a short video. So far, there's been a total of 13,481,307 credits worth of exploration data sold during New Year, new discoveries to the fleet carrier, Lunar Hyperflight alone, not including bits of pieces others had sent in yet, or are waiting for their own bubble systems to send to. We've had 32,427 recorded hyperspace jumps, 2,214,856 light years recorded travel, 249,062 recorded celestial bodies, 169,026 tons of fuel left. And this is a video of our final mass jump. Members of the Expedition Celebration of Early Astronomy 4 are having fun checking out stars and systems that their distant ancestors could only see through telescopes and their imagination. Commander Kesica and her team have issued this communique. We're on the final leg of CEA 4, and boy is this one long. Starting off we have V Cygni, aka HIP-102082, which is 200 times the size of our Sun, but only has twice the mass. Next is Corot-9, which is part of the stellar cluster IC-4756, also known as Graf's cluster. This cluster is in the Serapins constellation and is bright enough to be seen with the naked eye. The first planet in the system is the confirmed extrasolar planet Corot-9b. We're also swinging by up 46 Upsilon Sagittarii, which means being in a blue supergiant that you can see from Earth without a telescope. It is also rich in jumponium and is nearby to the Mammon system, which has a station for easy drop-off of data. Heaven's Lathe is also a nice place to swing by. The main star, HD-175876, has a companion neutron star with rings which have an effective radius of 12 light seconds, but a mass only slightly greater than Jupiter's small moon Thebe. Hopefully the boost off that neutron star will get everyone some extra distance, as we're now heading to Snake Sector PD-S B4-1 to get a view of the Snake Nebula, which is also known as Barnard 72. The nickname came from its shape being thin and wavy. Time for another neutron star boost, as our next destination is the Coronet Pulsar, catalogued as RxJ1856.5-3754, and more commonly known in Elite, PSRJ 1856-3754. It is the closest known neutron star to our solar system, and due to the error-prone nature of some early measurement methods, was hypothesized to be a quark star, a hypothetical star type, as it was gauged incorrectly to be 700,000 degrees Celsius. When later measurements revealed it was actually 434,000 degrees Celsius. Whoops! At least it still provided an FSD boost, so we can get to the raw Opiuchi Cloud complex quicker. Specifically, IC 4604 sector FB-X C1-17. This dark nebula is located 1 degree south of the star P. Opiuchi, part of the constellation Opiuchus. Its distance from our solar system is estimated at 131 plus or minus 3 parsecs. We'll also be hitting up Antares, the 15th brightest star in the sky and the brightest star in the Scorpius constellation, which has a very distinct red hue when viewed with the naked eye, apt for a red supergiant, which is one of the largest known stars. It has a companion star, Antares B, which is a typical B-class star and is the first thing anyone jumping into the system will see. Shapley 1, which was discovered in 1936 by Harlow Shapley, is our next stop. This annular planetary nebula, when viewed from Earth, is almost perfectly perpendicular. The central star is one of those that differs between the galaxy map and the direct observation. In the former, it is a Wolf-Rayet star. In the latter, it is a white dwarf. Perhaps some new discoveries were made since the Stellar Forge's work was completed. And finally for this week's coverage, we have HIP 62270, which is within the Coalsack Nebula. It is the most prominent dark nebula in the night sky from our solar system. If the skies are dark enough to see the Milky Way as a band, you'll see it as a patch obscuring a brief section of it. Pilots, be careful. This is one of the Thargoid hotspots. And Kezika and her crew would like to thank Commanders Sylvie, Rakav 102, Vespa Solaris and Xandru for the screenshots. The Bandit Racing League event we mentioned is getting closer, and Commander DB Exterminator has offered us this exclusive reveal.
Greetings, Commanders. As a reminder, the Bandit Racing League race will be on the 5th of March at 2000 UTC. Now, as for the special prizes, the winners from each category will receive a limited edition Bandit Racing League decal. I've only had 10 made up, but after they're gone, I will do something different. Stay tuned here for more.
And here's a report from Alec Turner about the Buckyballers' first race in the Magic 8 Ball Championship, entitled Back to Paraiso, and hosted by Mal for the Win. It was a rerun of the 3305 Classic Full Throttle at Paraiso. Alex says,
winner in both ship classes was Buckyball racer extraordinaire Commander Shay Blackwood, who achieved the seemingly impossible in the Unlimited class by making 21 stops in 20 minutes using his Viper, and damn near doing the same in the Regulation class, being just 3 seconds short of making 16 stops with an unengineered Cobra. Commanders Segura and Bruski weren't far behind, taking second and third in Regulation, and Segura was also the runner-up in the Unlimited class, with Captain MD holding his early podium place to finish third. Otherwise, the race saw record attendance, with 39 people competing in the Regulation Cobra class and 24 pushing their Unlimited ships to the limit. The Buckyball Racing Club would like to congratulate everyone for getting the Magic 8 Ball Championship off to such a fantastic start. The next race, which takes place in March, will be a reboot of the Aquarian job, which saw Commander Tanik Seldon go down in legend when he drove his SRV halfway around a planet to get a replacement ship and thereby finish his run.
Commander Shoreside Customs has told us about an event that's happening this Saturday, 26th of February, 3308. It's called Small Ship Smackdown. It's being organised by the Hotboxers, but if a PC or Hot PS commander wants to organise an event to enjoy in their own parallel universes, that would be welcome. Commander Venezia has proudly proclaimed that he gets an evening off baby duty and says...
Sorry. Come and join us for an extremely fun event of ramming, shooting, poking and whatever else tickles your fancy to defeat your opponent. Have you thought about engineering the deadliest sidewinder the galaxy has ever seen? Maybe you just want to fly in circles around your opponents in your custom eagle and laugh as they can't get a bead on you. Perhaps you want to build a tanky asp and slam into your opponent until they see the rebuy screen. Whatever your method may be, come out and join us for a great event. Last ship flying wins. All small ships, engineered or not.
Welcome to this event.
Commander Hunter is never idle for long, and indeed he sent us early notice of something he is brewing.
5 Euro Tours is adding the last few waypoints to a new expedition. Planned to leave in May 3308, it's expected to be a 10 to 12 week expedition, travelling over 95,000 light years. More info soon.
Are you organising an event, or have you heard of one that we've not included? Then please email itookpart@huttonorbital.com and we can broadcast it to the galaxy.